Tibó! Everybody's talking, no one says a word. Everybody's making love, no one really cares. There's Natchez in the bathroom, just below the stairs. Always something happening, and nothing going on. There's always something cooking, and nothing in the pot. They're starving back in China, so finish what you got.
The other day, it was 10-13, 2010, October the 13th, and on 10-13-1307, Friday the 13th, by the way, the Knights Templar were driven out of France by Philip the Fair. So the 10-13 date has great significance associated with the Knights Templar. It's worth noting that the Masonic cornerstone of the White House is dated to 10-13-1792. And this year, 10-13-10, if you add that up, 10 plus 13 plus 10, you get 33 from the 33rd degree Freemason, the highest level of Freemasonry. So 10-13 is a number of significance, and 33 is a number of significance in these secretive societies. And so what a coincidence that on 10-13-10, a bunch of weird stuff happens. Okay, first of all, there were UFOs over New York. I didn't think there'd be any UFOs on 10-13, but it looks like there were some. Because an ex-NORAD officer predicted that there would be. I think he was saying a massive worldwide UFO display on 10-13. Here's an article, Manhattan UFOs predicted by ex-NORAD officer, from the Epoch Times. Manhattan UFO sightings that generated buzz in downtown New York City coincided with a prediction made by Stanley A. Fulham, a retired NORAD officer, in his recently published book, according to a press release dated September 13, 2010. In Challenges of Change 3rd edition, Fulham says that a fleet of UFOs would hover over Earth's major cities on October 13th and says this event is the first interaction that leads to mankind's acceptance of aliens. That turns out to be the same day of the UFO sightings. Fulham claims that he had experiences with UFOs dating back to World War II and has received a plethora of historical data on NORAD's experiences with UFOs that have never before been revealed. Epoch Times reporter Stephen Summer was an eyewitness of the UFOs and was present at a scene where New Yorkers gathered and pointed at the mysterious metallic objects in the sky. Summer said he was walking near the corner of 28th Street and 6th Avenue when he saw groups of people looking up. He said he looked up as well and saw four small, shiny objects in the sky. Videos of the UFOs have gone viral on the internet and clearly show shiny silver objects floating over Manhattan. Elsewhere, other New Yorkers had different explanations for the sightings, including the theory that it was a bunch of escaped helium balloons. Quote, UFO, they're crazy. Those are our balloons, said Angela Freeman, head of the Milestone School in Mount Vernon. The teacher and her pupils at the Westchester Elementary School believe the silvery disks over Manhattan were actually balloons intended to celebrate language arts teacher Andrea Croparo's engagement, the New York Daily News reported. To me, it was the most automatic thing, she told the Daily News. At a UFO press conference at the National Press Club last month, a group representing 120 former military men told stories of UFOs visiting nuclear weapons sites throughout the 60s, 70s, 80s, and up to more recent times. The men are still seeking full disclosure from the U.S. government. So, very interesting that UFOs actually appeared on 10-13. They don't really look like balloons. They look like whitish orbs. They don't seem to be flowing in the wind like a balloon would. Something else that happened on 10-13 was that the 33 trapped miners in Chile were rescued. And there's kind of some weird things associated with that whole ordeal. Let me start off here. Here's a little article. Looks like this is iolnews.co.za. 13. Unlucky for some, unless you add 10 plus 10. San Jose Mine. There were 33 miners trapped deep underground in northern Chile. It took 33 days to drill into the group to reach them. Some say the numbers are just a coincidence, but others say there is more to it. The work took 33 days total, one day, one man, said Mikhail Prostakis, manager of Driller Supply Company, which participated in the drilling of the rescue shaft with a diameter of 66 centimeters, which is 33 times 2. Quote, "I believe in numerology, it has to mean something," end quote. Last but not least, the expected rescue began on October 13th, 2010, which can be written 13, 10, 10, adding up to 33, a fact pointed out by President Sebastian Panera. "The 33 appears in everything. Everything matches. It's a miracle," said Maria Segovia, sister of miner Dario Segovia. "A number of devout Catholics have also pointed out that Jesus was 33 when he was crucified, according to popular belief. Others call attention to the first note the miners sent up to show that they were still alive. Quote, "Estamos bien en el refugio Los 33, end quote. All 33 of us are in the shelter, which was 33 characters in length. Now, I noticed, estamos bien en el refugio Los 33. If you add that up, you've got to add the spaces between the words and just have the number 33 written as numerals. And then you get 33 characters in what supposedly was on that note. So that's some weird coincidences. Here's a very good article from the Vigilant Citizen, "The Odd Masonic Imagery of the 33 Chilean Miners' Rescue." The rescue of 33 unfortunate Chilean miners has definitely turned into an international media event. All aspects of the rescue have been carefully staged to make the entire thing a spectacular show, inspiring emotions, admiration, and national pride. For those knowledgeable of Masonic and occult symbolism, it is hard not to ponder on the numerological and symbolic facts of the event. Here are some of them. Number one, the number of miners. The number 33 is of great importance in Freemasonry and in Kabbalah system of numbers. It can be found in many instances in Masonic lore. For example, here's a quote from Manly P. Hall's Secret Teachings of All Ages. Quote, "For example, consider the number 33. The first Temple of Solomon stood for 33 years in its pristine splendor. At the end of that time, it was pillaged by the Egyptian king Shishak, and finally, 588 BC, it was completely destroyed by Nebuchadnezzar, and the people of Jerusalem were led into captivity to Babylon. Also, King David ruled for 33 years in Jerusalem. The Masonic order is divided into 33 symbolic degrees. There are 33 segments in the human spinal column, and Jesus was crucified in the 33rd year of his life," end quote. Okay, here's another quote from the same book, I think. "Alchemy is a threefold art, its mystery well symbolized by a triangle. Its symbol is 3 times 3, three elements or processes, and three worlds or spheres. The 3 times 3 is part of the mystery of the 33rd degree of Freemasonry, for 33 is 3 times 3, which is 9, the number of esoteric man and the number of emanations from the root of the divine tree." Okay, number two, the date of the event. The date of the start of the rescue is also significant, 10-13-10, which can Kabbalistically be calculated this way, 10 plus 13 plus 10, which equals 33. Number 3, the Phoenix. The name of the rescue device was named Phoenix, which is a bird that rose from its ashes. Once again, the selection of the name Phoenix, a mythological creature holding a great importance in occult mysteries, is quite interesting. The bird is considered a symbol of accomplishment of alchemical transmutation, a process equivalent to human regeneration. More Manly P. Hall here. Quote, in the mysteries, it was customary to refer to initiates as phoenixes, or men who had been born again. For just as physical birth gives man consciousness in the physical world, so the neophyte, after 9 degrees in the womb of the mysteries, was born into a consciousness of the spiritual world. End quote. Number 4. The number of days it took to drill the hole, 33. And, okay. So I mentioned that in the previous article. Number 5, the notes sent by the miners, having 33 characters, which I already mentioned. Number 6, the symbolism of the event. To summarize the rescue event, 33 miners who were trapped for 69 days in the depths and darkness of the underground were lifted one by one on 10-13-10 in a device called Phoenix, a creature representative of occult initiation to the light of day. As they say, ex tenebris lux, from darkness to light. With these facts in mind, I'm asking you this. Was the Chilean miners' rescue a Masonic mega-ritual? Okay, that's the end of that. What's also interesting, there's an image here. When these miners were rescued, they were given these T-shirts. They have a big pentagram on the front. An inverted pentagram. Five-pointed star. On the sleeve, it says Jesus. So all the symbology associated with this ordeal, and going back to Jesus, the resurrection of Jesus, I mean, he was crucified, put in a cave, and after 3 days he resurrected and emerged, as the story goes. And what all this is making me think of here on this Masonic date is, you know, because I'm paying so much attention to the elites and the return of the Destroyer Star, Wormwood, Planet X, and the preparations to possibly go underground during the turbulence as this thing passes back through our area of the solar system and brings with it all kinds of who knows what objects that are going to hit the Earth and whatever else is going to happen. And, you know, the idea of going underground to protect yourself from that and then emerging after it's all done with. So 10-13, other things associated with 10-13, there was the miracle of the sun in Fatima, Portugal on 10-13-1917. Creator of the X-Files, Chris Carter, his production company is called 10-13 Productions. Interesting. Supposedly he was born on 10/13. I guess he was. 10/13/1956. And also what all of this stuff makes me think of is that if you go back 2 years on 10/14/2008, Blossom Goodchild, she had predicted that on that date there'd be a UFO display, which did not occur. And she claims that she channeled information from other beings that told her about that. And then that's what this ex-NORAD guy is saying too, that he channeled information that told him that 10/13/2010 would be the date. And going back a year ago to an article I did relating to the moon bombing, which was on 10/9/09, I was kind of highlighting 10/13/2009 as something possibly happening relating to UFOs and ETs. Because what I did, I was looking at, okay, on October 9th, NASA's going to bomb the moon. And I was looking at Freeman's stuff, and I saw how he had highlighted the date 10/13. And I was thinking, okay, so maybe something significant is going to happen on 10/13. And I was like, oh, well, on 10/9, NASA's going to bomb the moon. So what if on 10/13, there's like some kind of retaliation or display of UFOs? And that whole thing with bombing the moon was pretty weird. They picked the original destination. They announced where on the moon they were going to bomb. They announced that on September 11, 2009. They originally chose the Cabeus A crater. The L Cross team. But then they changed it to Cabeus proper. And so I was kind of thinking, well, what if this would all result in a world-changing event in the form of a retaliation strike against Earth, whether real or fake? Because how respectful is it to just bomb neighboring bodies in space to supposedly find out if there is water on them? That's pretty barbaric. And then this is interesting. On 11/13, which was a Friday the 13th, 2009, NASA announced that their 10/9 moon bombing indeed found there to be water on the moon. They said, quote, "And we didn't just find a little bit, we found a significant amount." And this 11/13, I'm sorry, the 10/9 moon bombing, it turns out it's 33 days before 11/11, whatever that means. So yeah, you know, these things with numerological significance, it makes me think that they're planned this way for people in the know. If you got a date coming up that equals 33 and it's 10/13, the date of the cornerstone of the White House and the date the Knights Templar are driven out of France. And you're in these secretive fraternities who shape the world. Perhaps you try to orchestrate something happening on that day. Okay, another story from 10/13 that caught my eye has to do with rabbits at the Denver International Airport. And if you follow the work that Lucas is putting out, I'm helping him to get it out there, then a story about Denver Airport and rabbits on a Masonic date is pretty funny. Here we go. Car eating rabbits feast at airport. This is from KVO.com. Tiny mammals munch on soy-based wiring at cars at Denver International parking lot. October 13th, 2010. Dexter Meyer just bought a turbo diesel Volkswagen Jetta. Quote, "I'm just headed into retirement and wanted to buy a car that was a little more dependable," Meyer said. He drove it to the Pikes Peak parking lot at Denver International Airport and headed out for a 9-day vacation. When he returned, the car he thought was so dependable was not. I turned on the ignition and all these lights started flashing. I pulled out the manual and it said I had a big problem, so I took it back to the dealership, Meyer said. The service manager said, "Your wiring has been eaten by a rodent, probably." I said, "I live in Stapleton. I'm not aware of any rodents running around Stapleton." And then he said, "You didn't have the car parked at DIA, did you?" And I said, "Actually, yes. That's where I picked the car up." And he said, "We've had a significant number of problems with rabbits eating through the wiring in people's cars." Meyer filed a complaint with the DIA Risk Management Department about the damages. They said they were aware of the problem, but basically we don't know how to solve it. They said, "We have a fence," and I said, "I understand that, but it's clearly not working," he said. After spending $238, Myers' car is like new, but he now just wants airport parking lot customers to know what happened to him and be aware of the problem. I'm just concerned people know and that the airport is at least notifying people, Meyer said. DIA officials said they see about a dozen of these claims each year. They declined to be on camera or release a statement about this particular instance, saying that it's impossible to prove it happened at the airport. Larry Miller dealership in Lakewood is where Meyer took his car. A service manager there confirmed the car was repaired for damage caused by rodents or rabbits. He also confirmed that the dealership has seen at least a handful of cars come in recently, with the owners saying that their car warning lights came on after being parked at DIA. Now, the statue of Anubis is still out there at the DIA, along with the blue horse with red eyes, and apocalyptic murals, and a underground base that might have reptilians in it. And the roof is this very expensive Kevlar roof. Looks like this high-tech tent. And so let me play this video about the rabbits. Let's see. We'll see how this is.
"Well, I have just headed into retirement, and I was looking for a car that was a little more dependable."
Dexter Meyer's turbo diesel Jetta is only a few weeks old.
"Pretty excited about it."
He drove his new VW to Pikes Peak parking lot at DIA and headed out for vacation. But when he returned, the car he thought was so dependable was not.
"I turned on the ignition key and all these lights started flashing."
Meyer took it back to the dealership.
"The service manager called me and said the wiring had been eaten. He said, 'You didn't have the car parked at DIA.
Volkswagen 666 VW.
That's where I picked the car up. And he said, "Well, we've had a significant number of problems with rabbits eating through the wiring in people's cars. And in fact, we had to have one car towed here."
he filed a complaint with Airport Risk Management, and today he heard back.
They called and said that they were aware of the problem. She was very friendly and very helpful and, concerned, but basically said, we're aware and we're trying to deal with it, but we don't really know how to solve it.
We have a fence, and I said, well, I understand that, but clearly that's not working.
$238 later, his car is like new, and he just wants airport parking lot customers to know what happened to him.
As a consumer, you have a choice of different modes of transportation, the bus, the shuttles, or parking in a lot. And I said, if every time I go, I have to pay for parking and pay $238, that's a disincentive for me to park in your lot.
Will you be parking in that lot again?
I don't think so. No, I think I'll be taking the shuttle to the RTD.
That's one weird airport, man. Car-eating rabbits. It's the latest from the DIA.
If you didn't care, what happened to me? And I didn't care for you. We would zigzag away through the border of pain, occasionally glancing up through the rain, wondering which of the bugs to blame. And watching for pigs on the wing. You know that I care, what happens to you? And I know that you care for me too. So I don't feel alone on the way to the stone. Now that I've found somewhere safe to bury my bone, and any fool knows a dog needs a home. A shelter from pigs on the wing.
And I think I'll go ahead and say happy birthday to John Lennon, who would have turned 70 on October 9th. Which is 10-9, same date as the moon bombing. And here's something from Adam Gorightly's website. It's called Happy Birthday, John Lennon. Number 9. Lennon's numerological odyssey began with his birth on October 9th, 1940. His son, Sean, was also born on October 9th. Some claim that Yoko and John expedited Sean's birth by rushing Yoko into a cesarean operation so that the child would be born on the same date as John. As a Liverpudian lad, Lennon grew up in England at 9 Newcastle Road. Brian Epstein discovered the Beatles on November 9, 1961. The Beatles played their first gig at the Cavern Club in 61. 9 years later, in 1970, they officially split. The group rocketed to superstardom after appearing on the Ed Sullivan Show on February 9, 1964. Several of Lennon's tunes feature the number 9 theme, such as Revolution number 9 on the White Album and number 9 Dream from Walls and Bridges. John married Yoko in 69. He met her on November 9, 1966. They moved from England to New York in 71 and lived there for 9 years until Lennon was shot to death outside the entrance of the Dakota on December 8, 1980. After receiving the fatal gunshots, Lennon was transported to Roosevelt Hospital on 9th Street and was officially pronounced dead at 11:07 p.m. 1 plus 1 plus 7 equals 9. In England, John's birthplace, it was already December 9th. The Dakota Building is located on West 72nd Street, 7 plus 2 equals 9. The Lennon's apartment number at the Dakota was 72. Once again, 7 plus 2 equals 9. Above Lennon's bed at the Dakota hung the number 9. Eerily enough, one of the apartment buildings Lennon purchased at the Dakota was used in the making of Roman Polanski's occult classic Rosemary's Baby. According to author R.R. Gary Patterson, when Lennon discovered the Rosemary's Baby connection, he purportedly wrote Helter Skelter on the wall in the apartment, then moved a file cabinet in front of the wall to hide the words. The Beatles' last album, Abbey Road, was recorded in 1969. In 69, Lennon officially changed his name from John Winston Lennon to John Ono Lennon, noting that between John Ono Lennon and Yoko Ono Lennon, there were only nine O's. Interesting. Lennon claimed to have seen a UFO while standing on the roof at the Dakota at 9 a.m. John and Yoko's tarot card reader performed a pagan nuptial ceremony in 75 to celebrate their 6th wedding anniversary. The ceremony commenced at 9 p.m. Number 9, number 9, number 9. Three times three is nine.